Okay, translation and purport given by Devangai Srila Prabhupada ki. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. Purport. Human society all over the world is divided into four castes and four orders of life. The four castes are the intelligent caste, the martial caste, the productive caste, and the laborer caste. These castes are classified in terms of one's work and qualification, and not by birth. Then again, there are four orders of life, namely the student life, the householder's life, the retired, and the devotional life. In the best interest of human society, there must be such divisions of life. Otherwise, no social institution can grow in a healthy state. And in each and every one of the above-mentioned divisions of life, the aim must be to please the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. This institutional function of human society is known as the system of Varnashrama Dharma, which is quite natural for the civilized life. The Varnashram institution is constructed to enable one to realize the absolute truth. It is not for artificial domination of one division over another. When the aim of life, i.e., realization of the absolute truth, is missed by too much attachment for indriya priti or sense gratification, as already discussed herein before, the institution of the Varnashram is utilized by selfish men to pose an artificial predominance over the weaker section. In the Kali Yuga, or in the age of quarrel, this artificial predominance is already current, but the saner section of the people know it well, that the divisions of castes and orders of life are meant for smooth social intercourse and high-thinking self-realization, and not for any other purpose. Herein, the statement of Bhagavatam is that the highest aim of life, or the highest perfection of the institution of the Varnashram Dharma, is to cooperate jointly for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 13. Ata pumbir dvija shreshta varnashrama vibhagashah swanusthithasya dharmasya samsidir haritoshanam. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna. So before I start, just want to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled here, and of course the senior Vaishnavas in particular. This is also my first class in the morning Bhagavatam class, so naturally a bit of nerves are there. I'll do my best to do justice to the verse. Vyasa-san is a lofty position to sit on, but in Kali Yuga, I try to follow Prabhupada's instructions, and apologies if I make any mistakes in conveying the knowledge. Hare Krishna. Okay, so this is one of the most, well, obviously all of these verses, as you've been seeing over the last few classes, they're very, very famous verses. This one is also a very well-known verse, and it's a very deep verse. In fact, when I was looking at the subject here, it's about Varnashram, it's such a deep and complex subject that don't think that in one lesson you're going to understand all the ins and outs of Varnashram. That will require a whole year to go through, probably even more. But at least from today's presentation, hopefully we'll get a better overview of Varnashram, this social system, and how it relates to our Krishna consciousness and our Krishna conscious lifestyle. Okay, just to give a quick recap, a synopsis of what has been covered over the first two chapters. So, first chapter, second verse, we are establishing the superiority of this scripture of all others, Dharma Projita Ketava, where we're saying that this Bhagavatam, this is the creme de la creme, the essence of all the different scriptures in the Vedic scriptures. Okay, we looked at also the next chapter, it goes to the value of going through the acharyas, because it talks about how the Bhagavatam is more relishable when you hear it from the mouths of the Goswami, Sukadev Goswami, Sudha Goswami. And this way it's showing the significance of parampara, how we cannot learn this on our own, we have to go through the parampara. Okay? Through the process, we're also understanding that this Bhagavatam, because it's the cream, it's actually what we're meant to be looking at primarily in terms of Vedic study. 98% of the Vedas is actually not technically spiritual. What I mean by that is the Vedas are coming from Krishna. In one sense, on a grand level, they are spiritual, if you look at it from a meta perspective. But on a more kind of specific level, there are divisions there. And most of what the Vedas is about is material, being materially adjusted properly. One can ask the question that if Krishna wants us back, we all understand we're not the body, we're the soul, we're spirit soul stuck in this material realm of reality. Why would Krishna give us a system to help us to be materially adjusted to this place? So it's a question of damage limitation. Meaning that Krishna knows that most of the jivas that are here, they don't have so much of a desire to go back to Godhead. They want to live here, they want to indulge in their desires. There's two ways we can do it. You can do it in a very nice karmic way, or you can do it in a vikarmic way. So vikarmic means, generally the difference between a person who's a karmakanda and person who's not following any religious principles is the approach that they take to fulfilling their desires, the modus operandi. They want the same things. They want prosperity, power, material happiness. Well, the difference is you can either do it in a vikarmic way and where you exploit others, abuse others, cause bad reactions for yourself, or you do it in a karmic way by following the principles, and through that, you're limiting the amount of bad karma you're getting for yourself. It's not a foolproof plan, however, as we shall see later on, but it's the best possible situation we can get. Just like if I want to drive from here outside the manor, I can either use my car to go right across the car park through the field, crashing through the farm fence, maybe knocking a few people over the way, getting to that direction, to the entrance, or I can follow the rules of the system by going round the corner, up above the humps, and then going nicely, following the rules. That's basically the difference between karma kanda and vikarma, basically. Okay, so then what happens is it comes to chapter 2. Okay, so chapter 1 is basically saying, put aside all this karmakandic stuff, we're getting to the essence now. And what the sages are asking, that now that we're getting to the essence, the sages are asking, where have the principles gone for shelter now that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is gone? Because Krishna's now left the planet, right? As in, he's there, but you know what I mean, in the practical perspective. He's left our vision. And so where are we going? So then, Bhagavatam comes in place. The criminology where we take our shelter. Chapter 2, the first three verses, are talking about what is the essence of the Vedas? Loving devotional service, right? And Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that ultimately the purpose of all the Vedas is to come to me. Vedeshya sarver aham eva vedyo, vedanta krit vedavit eva chaham. Okay? Come to me by all the Vedas, I am to be known. That's sum and bonum of it all. Okay? Then chapter verse 8 in this chapter talks about all our occupational activities, what's the use of them? So ultimately they're only actually useless labor. Right? People spend most of their time in this society just working hard, Prabhupada often said, working like hogs, dogs, camels, asses, etc. But it's all so much useless labor unless you're using it for a higher purpose. Ultimately, Prabhupada is saying that, in fact, it was in verses 9 to 10, that the whole point of occupation is just for self-preservation. Right? It's just to maintain yourself so that you can live simply and pursue higher goals in life. And then finally we come to this verse, which talks about what is the highest perfection of life. Discharging one's duty in order to please the personality of Godhead. So, he's given a system here. Not Prabhupada. Prabhupada's obviously talking about the system, but Krishna himself has given a system called Varnashram. In every society you see there are systems. But they say the root of all these systems is Varnashram. Four stages of life, which is basically going from brahmachari, monk life, or student life, to family life, to retired life, and finally to sannyas, which means renunciate. And with that, you've got four occupational duties. Brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, sudra, which are the priests, the scholars, the intellectuals, the head of society. the Kshatriyas, the arms, they're like the warriors, the administrators. You have the Vaishyas, which are the merchants, the traders, the farmers, and the Sudras, who are the laborers and caste, laborers and craftsmen. quick question. Do you think Varnashram is necessary in this day and age, particularly for Krishna conscious devotees? This is for you guys. What do you think? Yes? Yeah? No. Okay. So it's interesting. Prabhupada actually said, Prabhupada says different things. You know how it is with Prabhupada's quotes. You have to look in context. It's in one of the quotes, Prabhupada said, 50% of my work is done and 50% is unfinished. And he was meaning Varnashram. At the same time, he said that whatever is needed for the mission is already here. And not just the mission, wherever we need for our own path towards self-realization is already there. Without the concept of Varnashram even there. So you can potentially carry on with your Krishna consciousness, not worry about these four stages and four orders of life, and become self-realized. Because ultimately, bhakti is self-sufficient, right? It's ahetuki, apratihata, it's unmotivated, uninterrupted, it cannot be impeded by any kind of social factor. We understand that. And in fact, if you look at the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there are 64 elements of devotion, and in not one of them is Varnashram actually mentioned. In fact, in the recent times, the acharya that first talked about Varnashram was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He mentions the concept of Devi Varnashram. Okay. Now it's interesting that so far we're talking about getting rid of all the Vedic karmakandic stuff, getting down to devotional service, but then Krishna is bringing back, at least Sutta Goswami, is bringing back the concept of Varnashram here. Prabhupada is talking about Varnashram. So we have to look at, what do we mean by Varnashram? Are we talking the material sense or a spiritual sense? Any social order system can be used for different purposes. Okay, if you look at a lot of the systems around the world, they have their roots in Varnashram. The European system, if you look at the European system of occupation and stuff, it originated in medieval times with the feudal system, with the clergy, knights, serfs. But then that in itself was also being extrapolated from the Greeks when they came out with the Plato's Republic. But this whole concept of Plato's Republic also had its roots in Varnashram from the Vedic times. Now just to let you know, obviously since I'm talking about this, I took some knowledge from a few different sources. One is the understanding I've gleaned over the years from listening to different classes in Varnashram, from Bhuta Bhavana Prabhu, Kartik Chandra Prabhu, etc. Also, I've got a lot of inspiration from Chaitanya Chandra Prabhu and Shivar Maharaj, because Shivar Maharaj, as you might know, has been doing a lot of work on Varnashram so far. Okay, in this purport, one of the things that Prabhupada is saying is that all over the world, this Varnashram is existing, right? It's existing. So you're thinking, really? Because when you look at the world, we are living in a very degraded times. There's so much injustice, etc. We might think that this world is more advanced than it was before. But actually, ecologically, economically, psychologically, we're more degraded than we were in previous times. Economically as well, because there might be more money distribution. There's more, might be wealth in the world right now, but it's concentrated in a smaller percentage of the population than would have been in previous times. But you have to look at, Varnashram is made up of two aspects, guna and karma. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada mentions chapter 4, verse 13, which is the verse, chatu varnya maya shishtam guna karma vibhagasa. Two aspects, guna and karma. Karma means your work, and guna means your quality. What you see right now in the world is there's elements of Varnashram existing, but in terms of karma, but not necessarily guna. In fact, the guna is more subtle than karma. So guna has to be looked at first. If the guna is in place, then karma will naturally fall into place. Okay. So firstly, we recognize that, okay, Varnashram may not be necessary for our own personal devotional life, and yet Prabhupada insisted that we still have it. So look at why. There are four types of Varnashram. Okay. First is your natural Varnashram. Natural Varnashram means that every one of us has an innate tendency for a certain occupation, certain activity. It's often said our psychophysical nature. These are almost like four human types. So when Prabhupada went to America, he said, I'm looking for the Brahmanas in this society. Now, if you're, let's say, a a very fastidious, smarter Brahmana from India, you'd say, how can you look for Brahmanas there? What Brahmana, what kind of rituals and ceremonies are they doing there? But what is Prabhupada looking at here? He's not looking at the rituals and the purificatory rites that you've done, right, to qualify as a Brahmana. He's looking at your innate tendency. Okay? Four human types, which of course, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. He looked for the... So each one of us has a natural inclination. Now this might contradict what also it said in the verse that in Kali Yuga, everyone's a Sudra. Right? We'll look at that in a minute. Okay. So there's innate Brahmana qualities, which is Janmano, Brahmano, Jnayaha. Right? This is the innate Brahman qualities that some of us might have. Then you've got samskara dvija uchyate. Dvija means what? Twice born. Right? This is where you do some purificatory rites, then to become qualified as a Brahmana. Partial qualification. And then you've got vidya vayati vipratva, which means you fulfill the six occupational duties of a Brahmana to become a vipra Brahmana. When you have the innate Brahman qualities, the dvija qualities, and the vipra qualities, then you become tribi shrotriya uchyate, you become a fully qualified learned Brahmana. When Prabhupada went to the USA, he's not looking at the tribi qualities, he's looking at the first one, the innate Brahman qualities. Of course, with that, he's also looking at the innate tendencies of other people, what kind of varnas they may belong to as well. So if you look at the Brahmana, the different varna qualities, how do you identify these different qualities? One is through what kind of activities they do. So Brahmanas, they're known for being renounced, detached, philosophically inclined. A Kshatriya is very much inspired by discipline, systemization, systemizing thing, monitoring, checking things. Okay, these are general tendencies. Vaishyas, they're very much inspired by results and business. Okay, and of course, Sudras, they weren't just hard work and fun. They have a predilection towards body care as well, the body. If you look at the different varnas, the Sudras are most materially connected with the world in terms of being materially grounded, whereas Brahmanas are most detached. It's like you can say as a joke that if you have a bunch of Brahmanas in a room together, they will come up with wonderful concepts, but they might not get anything done because they're busy talking. But practical application-wise, the other Varna is actually potentially better at applying things and putting into practice than a Brahmana. Okay? You look at also how do people use their money, right? For example, a Brahmana, he would keep just what he needs and the rest he distributes to charity. Okay? A Kshatriya would also keep what he needs to run his estate, distribute the rest to the needful, to charity, etc. Vaishya will invest in business, and rest he may distribute. And a Sudra will often save something and spend the rest. And of course, if Sudras are not directed properly, they can even spend it on things that are not good for them, like in modern day system could be drugs, etc. Okay? Again, look at the work that the different varnas do. You can even assess this on yourself. What kind of work are you most inclined towards? If you're a Brahmana, you'd be working with people through education, subtle pursuits like thinking, speaking, writing. And of course, if you're spiritually inclined, then obviously meditation, sacrifice, etc. Kshatriya would be working with money and people. Okay, and people meaning authorities, armed forces, etc. Vaishyas, we'd be working with material objects and money. And Sudras, material objects, meaning production, arts, etc. So these are natural tendencies. So there is a natural varnashram that existing ever in the world. At the moment, it's very mixed up, but still, there is natural tendencies in everywhere. If you look at a lot of the modern social systems, you can see elements of some of the varnas coming through. And you can see how people operate, what kind of system they gravitate towards, depending on their varna. For example, communism. What kind of varna do you think is very prominent in communism? Sudra. Because one of the things that inspires Sudra is security and stability. Right? There are certain aspects of society that very much reflect a Sudra type of nature. So communistic living, not communistic as in communalistic, but communism type society, rights, workers' rights, unions, labor unions, trade unions, these are all very much catered towards Sudras. Okay? capitalism, what kind of society would you say capitalism is very much reflecting? Vaishyas, okay? It's about profit, gain, productivity. So different varnas will be inspired by different things. Monarchy, of course, Prabhupada said, is very much of a Kshatriya-type nature. And he said that in traditional times, pre-Kali-Yuga times, monarchy was the ideal way. Because that's actually the Vedic system. The Kshatriyas would be ruling society. Not Brahmanas. Brahmanas would be guiding the Kshatriyas, but they wouldn't be ruling. In fact, a Brahmana's natural state of being is to be in anarchy. So they're not probably the best to have as the rulers. But they're good, because they've got such high-level intelligence, they're good to advise the Kshatriyas. In modern time, however, even though Prabhupada did say that, okay, democracy is demon crazy, you know, it's a Kali-Yuga type society, but at the same time, you know, I can't remember the date, but one of the conversations, Prabhupada said, at the moment, there are no qualified kings, so we work with democracy. It's like the making the best of a bad bargain. I'm looking at things from a kind of social perspective now, but you can see how Varnashram, even in this Kali-Yuga, plays out on a social level. Okay, next one. So this is the first type of Varnashram system. The next type of Varnashram system we have is called Asuric Varnashram. Asuric means demonic Varnashram system. This is the Varnashram system that is now existing in India. Okay, and this is controversial, but it's the truth. If you look at the modern day caste system in India, it is demoniac. Why? Because they're using the presumption that instead of seeing Varna as a human type, as a type of quality that you have within you, they're seeing it as a genealogical designation, meaning that it's based on your genetics, it's based on your family lineage. So for example, in Kali Yuga, what's happened in the olden times of Varna, remember I mentioned that it's based on guna and karma. It's not janma karma vibhagasa, it's guna karma vibhagasa, right? So in the modern day, the higher, so-called higher caste, they've monopolized the caste system, and they use it as a way to oppress the lower castes, the Sudras, mainly the Sudras actually, Vaishyas, you know, maybe to some extent, but especially the particular Sudras. Remember that in any given society, 80% of a society will be Sudras, right? So it's not that they're equal levels of population, the vast majority will be Sudras, because you don't need that many intellectual heads in a society, you just need a few brains, right? And then you need a lot of people to put into practice what the concepts are being given by the brain. Does that make sense, yeah? So, Asuric Varnashram is like, but if you look at the scriptures themselves, they actually mention that there was never any kind of understanding that is passed on family to family. So, in Bhagavatam 7th canto, there's a famous verse, Yasya la lakshanam proktam, right? Pumso varna bhiv yanjakam. Excuse my pronunciation. So, this is where it says that when the Varnashram was initially developed in the cosmos, it came from Manu. And from Manu, he brought forth different sons. One was a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. This is coming from the same person. The Manu himself is producing. And then Narad Muni also goes on to say that it's based on quality, not by birth. Okay? You have the example of King Rishabdev. King Rishabdev had 100 sons. 9 of them were Mahabhagavat Vaishnavas. 10 of them were Kshatriyas. And 81 of them were Brahmanas. So within the same family, you've got different Varnas. So you could be born in a Brahman. Let's say your family lineage might have a Brahminical surname. Like, especially if you're Indians and stuff, you know, say, yes, I come from a Brahman family in this. But it's not based on what your name is, especially in Kali Yuga. What to speak of other Yuga, but especially in Kali Yuga, is not based on what kind of surname you've got, what kind of family you think you're coming from, is based on innate qualities. So just like, you know, just give a mundane example, just because your father's a doctor doesn't mean that you'll naturally become a doctor. You might have some inclination towards it, but you still have to qualify yourself. In a lot of cases, you might not even have that quality to be a doctor. Okay? So that's Asuric Varnashram. Then we've got Vedic Varnashram. Now I just mentioned that it's not based on family. But there's a little contradiction here. When you read the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, they often talk about marriage. They talk about Brahmanas, Karna, Karna was Ekalavya, right? You know these examples? Ekalavya is rejected by Dronacharya because he had a Sudra mentality. He wasn't a Kshatriya, he came from a Sudra family. Of course, it's based on mentality, but then you see that in the olden days, there was some consideration towards family. Like you give the example of Roma Harshana, right? He was known as a Dharmalopa because he was of mixed Varna. So when you say, what do you mean by mixed Varna? On one hand, we're saying that it's down to our own innate quality, but then you're saying it's also our parents. They have a role in what, how we are. Here's the thing. In previous ages, the society was geared so whatever your qualities were, your occupation would be in line with your quality. And what you do, you'd marry a person who'd have similar quality. And this is going down generation after generation after generation after generation. Imagine you've got the same, you've got type of guna, and you're doing a karma in line with your guna. Not like Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is different. You might have a certain guna, but you could be in an occupation that's completely different from your guna. But in olden days, your guna and karma completely in line. And when this guna karma synchronization is being passed on generation after generation after generation, the genetic inheritance of the varnas becomes very strong. Very, very strong. So what happens is that when the soul that is coming and taking birth in a family, they get attracted to the collective conscious of a certain couple who are of the same conscious themselves. So that's why there was a large amount of correlation between your social occupation and your genealogical continuation. You understand what I mean, right? There's the social occupation and the genealogical correlation was very much in line. But even then, in those days, it wasn't 100%. So for example, even in previous yugas, you had the concept of Brahma Bandhus. So even in Satya Yuga or Dwapar, well not Satya because there was Hamsas then, but at least in Dwapar Yuga, Treta Yuga, you'd still have, you still need to qualify yourself as a Brahmana and develop those qualities. But the tendency towards a certain Varna would be very strong. The more stronger your inclination is towards a particular Varna, is actually the better you are situated, actually, even in Kali Yuga. And we'll look at some modern day examples. Fourth type of Varnashram is Devi Varnashram. Devi Varnashram is where you accept the social divisions of Varnashram. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokul Nanda Ki. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Sri Sri Gaunitai Ki. Okay. Devi Varnashram is where you accept the social divisions of Varnashram, Vedic Varnashram, but not the underlying philosophy. What is the philosophy of general Vedic Varnashram? It's basically being materially happy, situated, rising above the ranks. You one life, you're a Sudra, you work hard, fulfill your duties. Next life, you might become a Vaishya. Next life, you might become a Kshatriya. Next life, you might become a Brahmana. If you do really good pious activities, according to the Varnashram structure, you might even get chance to go to the heavenly planets. It's a very, very long-winded process. Okay? It is ultimately, it will lead you to God consciousness, because at some point, the living entity, even doing through normal Varnashram, not Devi Varnashram, normal standard Varnashram, will still one day have the realization that what am I doing in this material world? But it may be after many, many, many lives. Devi Varnashram is basically saying, forget all that. Forget about materially rising above the ranks, doing pious works. Vedi Varnashram is saying, doesn't matter what Varna you're in, work towards God consciousness and go straight to transcendence. Become straight Krishna consciousness. Fully Krishna conscious straight away. Whether you're a Sudra or a Brahmana, it doesn't matter. Just go straight. Right? Just for the satisfaction of Lord Hari. Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam. That's the point of Devi Varnashram. Okay, so we looked at the four types of Varnashram. You've got natural Varnashram, innate tendencies. You've got Asuric Varnashram, which is definitely not recommended, which unfortunately is what the modern day system in India is right now. You've also got Vedic Varnashram, which is very karmakandic in nature. And you've got Devi Varnashram, which is what Prabhupada is talking about in this verse. Because he's saying that this is the perfection of any social system, is to please Lord Hari. Okay? Now, what are the qualities required? We looked at the general tendencies of different Brahmanas, Kshatriyas. Now, in Devi, Devi means divine. So that means everything has to be tinged with divinity. Okay. We understand that in Kali Yuga, we're all degraded. and that we need to practice varnashram. And people often say, what is my varna? What is my varna? So firstly, you have to understand that for us ourselves to try and figure out our own varna through our own self-study is very difficult. We need the help of senior people who are more clued up on varnashram. Because remember, we're mixed in the modes. So we don't actually fully know exactly ourselves what our varna is. So first we need to get qualified. So this is the way Prabhupada talks about castes and orders. Caste. I must make it clear here, when Prabhupada says caste, when we think of caste now, generally, have you noticed in ISKCON, we don't use the word caste system, we use varnashram, because casteism has the connotations of what is going on in India right now. But in this case, Prabhupada used the word caste because obviously he belonged to a certain time and place where they'd use such words. Like he, for example, sometimes Prabhupada used the cult of Krishna consciousness. Of course, in modern day times, we probably wouldn't use the word cult because it's kind of scary, right? So, but he used the word caste, but well, let's look at the principle that Prabhupada is talking about here. Okay, you need to have a qualification to even practice Devi Varnashram. And this is where Shiva Maharaj has done a lot of work. Firstly, Shiva Maharaj actually mentions that before even looking at what kind of varna you are, first get onto the human platform, right? You need to actually become just a human being. Now, we may say to ourselves, but we are humans, you know, we've got hands and legs and, you know, we kind of like wear like clothes and stuff like that. We're humans. So Maharaj gave a wonderful example. Just because you're 17 years old doesn't make you qualified, or 18 years old, doesn't make you qualified to go to university or college. Can you read? Can you write? Can you add and subtract? So just because you look like a human doesn't mean that you are actually a human. And Prabhupada doesn't say, hardcore statement here, but he said that society nowadays is two-legged animals, right? So in the 7th canto, chapter 11, Narad Muni is talking to King Yudhishthir. And he outlines 30 qualities. And I'm not going to go through all the qualities because that's probably for another lesson. But another session, shall I say. But 30 qualities that Narad Muni gives to King Yudhishthir about just to become a human, right? These include, for example, purity, austerity, you know, sama, dhamma, tapa, saucham, cleanliness, truthfulness, non-violence, control of the mind, control of the senses, free from lust, anger, greed. Now, I don't know about you guys, but for a neophyte like me, when I'm looking at these qualities, I'm like, forget being a part of a varna, just these qualities are so lofty, right? In fact, if you look at the Gita and you compare these qualities, they're the basic qualities of a brahmana. Whereas in the Bhagavatam, they're actually the basic qualities just to be a human being, right? It's incredible. 21 of these qualities are just material qualities, religious qualities, like just to make yourself a person of good conduct. Not even spiritual, just good conduct like cleanliness, truthfulness, being humble. And then, of course, you've got the 9 transcendental qualities, which are the 9 activities that you do. Okay? So you can see from this that first thing first, before, when people think of varna, when they think about being situated, in ISKCON now you'll find there's a lot of talk about being materially situated, being in the right service. It's true, we should be in the right service. Tamal Krishna Maharaj once said, the reason why most people have left ISKCON in the past is not because of the philosophy, definitely not because of Prabhupada. In fact, even people that have left, I've spoken to people that have left ISKCON, they still have so much love for Prabhupada, right? It's definitely not because of Prabhupada. It's definitely not because of fall downs, etc., or getting fried up by devotees. The main reason why people have left ISKCON in the past is because they weren't situated. So we're not saying that you shouldn't look for what kind of vocation you should go for. But whilst you're searching for your vocation, at the same time, you have to also develop the qualities of being worthy to do that vocation, to do that service. So firstly, you get to the human platform, and from there, then you work towards what kind of vocation you're going to, or simultaneously work towards those vocations. Okay? And again, it comes down to how do we know that? Well, first you develop the qualities. How do we know avarna? You need purification. Right? These, developing the 30 human qualities will help you to purify your consciousness. By naturally practicing spiritual life also by chanting, you're naturally getting rid of the layers of conditioning. Like yesterday, one of the Matajis, she asked, how do we know the, was it qualities of the soul or something, the function of the soul? So before you do that, first you need to purify yourself through the spiritual practices, chanting, performing the different activities of devotional service. What happens? You start rising through the modes. When your modes are seriously mixed up, you cannot discern for yourself what kind of varna you are. It's just purely speculation. And not only that, You think that you yourself are mixed, and you think others are mixed too. It's like trying to see the vision through murky lens, murky water, right? What happens as you start getting purified, then you start to see things clearly, okay? And then what happens, not only do you understand your own varna, and your own kind of what kind of stage of life you should be in, but you also start to see others, and you start to see very clearly what kind of varna other people should be in as well, okay? People that are extremely attuned to varnashram, they can tell just by meeting you once, just by hearing you speak, they can tell you what kind of varna you're in. In some cases, they can tell just by the way you're walking. Like physiognomy reflects your internal state. So they can tell just by the way you're walking, moving, etc., what kind of varna you're in. Okay? So we need to be purified. Then what happens, our dominant nature, which is called our swabhav, it starts to come out. Right? Otherwise, like I said, it's just a murky state. Okay? Now, some people may ask that in Kali Yuga, if we're mixed, but don't we, what if we're like mixed in varna? Because remember I mentioned that in previous yugas, the genealogical lines were so strict, it's almost like selective breeding. Like, sorry for being flippant here, because you know, like in animals, they have selective breeding where the type of breeds of cows are like bred to develop certain qualities and they're fixed in that. Like a Jersey cow would naturally produce exceptionally good quality creamy milk, whereas a Frisian cow may not produce such creamy milk, but they produce naturally larger quantities of milk. For those of you who are farmers, you might know this, right? But obviously, if you mix a Jersey cow and a Frisian cow, then you're not neither getting the best quality creamy milk, neither you're getting a very high yield of milk either, because it's kind of mixed up now. But saying that though, even in the modern stage, even in Kali Yuga, everyone has a slight inclination to something more than the other. So even if you're Varna, you might have slightly mixed up elements of Varna within you, still there's always going to be a proclivity to something more than the other. And like I said, the more it is directed to something, the better you are situated. Some people are very lucky that even when they're born, their varnas are very distinct. For example, this varnashram is not just something Vedic, it's something universal. It's within everyone. The natural varna is within everyone. Like, a famous example is Warren Buffett. Has anyone heard of Warren Buffett? He's a famous multi-billionaire investor. He was making millions when he was still a teenager. No one had to tell him that Warren, why don't you go to university, find out for yourself what you want to do. He didn't need a careers advisor to tell him what he needs to do. He knew it. It's like natural, like Dr. Water. If you look at someone like Michael Jackson, right, he was a millionaire at 13 years old. He was singing and dancing from when he was like 7, 8 years old, right? It's part of the Jackson 5. You don't need to tell him, Michael, I think you should start singing and dancing. It's something so natural towards him, right? Incidentally, so like that, the more natural. Now, most of us might not be in that luxurious state where we have the varna so distinct. So therefore, we work towards developing the qualities. First, get on the human platform, and then from there, we work towards purifying our consciousness through the spiritual practices. Okay, now, the next point I want to talk on is the relationship between the varnas. Again, if you look at the modern Asuric Varnashram, is based on exploitation, it's based on oppression. So the problem is that when we come into Krishna consciousness, we sometimes bring these preconceptions into us. Many, many times I've been with devotees and they'll... Okay, sometimes like when we talk about varnashram in our groups, like, you know, when devotees talk about varnashram in their groups, like, especially when it comes to sudras, they'll joke, oh, you're just a sudra. I don't know if anyone ever come across this. Oh, no, yeah, you know, like they often, even on a very subtle level, they'll actually look down upon sudras. Where is this coming from? This is a subtle throwback to the modern society where it's very much based on status. Status-obsessed society. Sometimes people ask other people, like, what kind of varna am I? And sometimes I've experienced this myself where I feel even uncomfortable telling them what varna they are because I feel that might be offended, right? Because of this attachment to certain status. We must understand that varnashram is not about placing a moral, ethical value on you as a human being. If you're a sudra, you're a sudra. It doesn't matter, right? If you're in the body of a human with certain proclivities, it doesn't matter. The main thing is wherever position you're in, fulfill the requirements of that position nicely, go back to Godhead. You don't want a, like I mentioned before, you don't want a society full of brahmanas. It will be anarchy. Because brahmanas can't function or properly in mature societies. They can guide society, but to have a load of brahmanas together, like I mentioned, they will literally just be philosophizing and concepts and intelligence and, you know, counter intelligence and this and that. They'll be going through it, right? In the same way, if you have a bunch of all, every single person in society is a bunch of kshatriyas, everyone's going to be trying to dominate everyone, right? Just like in a car, you've got four wheels. Shivram Maharaj gives this example. In a car, you have four wheels. You don't have, it's not that everyone should be a wheel. You've got the four wheels, you've got the engine, you've got the, you know, the whole structure of the car, the bonnet, the boot, right? All these different components. The whole point of the different varnas are meant to work in cooperation with each other. And this is, even in a normal varnashram, in Devi varnashram, it's even more so. You're meant to see each person of the other varna as a servant of God. So the respect and the value that we place on each other in Devi varnashram should be paramount. There should be no need for this kind of status obsession, which I must say, sometimes I observe it creeps into devotional community as well. Okay? So the whole point is that varnashram is meant for self-realization, Devi varnashram. That's what we're looking at here. Devi varnashram, not normal Vedic varnashram, is to cooperate jointly for the satisfaction of the Lord. And remember this, the ultimate, it doesn't matter whether you're a Sudra, a Vaishya, Brahmana. If you're going towards Krishna, it doesn't matter. For example, there's a famous verse, Kiba Bipra Kiba Nashi Shudra Kene Noi, Jai Krishna Tattavet Shai Guru Hoy. Doesn't matter whether you're a sannyasi, doesn't matter whether you're a brahmana, doesn't matter whether you're a sudra, right? If you're cultivating God consciousness, you're qualified to be a guru. Similarly, Satkarma Nipuno Vipro Mantra Tantra Visarada Aveshnavo Guru Nasyat Swapache Swaguru, right? Even if you're proficient in the six occupational duties of a brahmana, if you're not cultivating Krishna consciousness, and there's a dog eater is considered even lower than like a beyond the varnashram system. If a dog eater person, right, is cultivating Krishna consciousness, he's considered higher than a brahmana. So we must make it clear that this whole varnashram system is simply a platform, an environment to just create the conditions conducive for cultivating Krishna consciousness. Nothing more. And that is how we should view varnashram. Ultimately, what, like I mentioned in the beginning, in the 1960s, this is an interesting thing. In the 1960s when Prabhupada came, he said there's no need for varnashram. Later he said, yes, there is a need. When he saw that people are coming, they're not being rightly situated, so then they're falling down from Krishna consciousness. He realized that, okay, your material standards need to be situated before you can be spiritually situated. But you can see that the primary thing is Krishna consciousness. Varnashram comes later. We should never get so caught up in varnashram that we lose sight of Krishna consciousness. Okay, to be honest, there's so much more to talk about on this. I've only covered like a fraction of what I wanted to talk about, but I've already gone over time. Apologies. Okay, I'll ask if there's any questions, if anyone wants to ask you questions, or we can go straight for breakfast. Any questions, comments, queries?